According to our next guest, everything we know about nuclear weapons is wrong. Ward Wilson, a senior fellow at the James Martin Center and author of the new book, Five Myths About Nuclear Weapons. His book is grounded in history and a deep understanding of international warfare and makes the case that these weapons just don't work. The book has already been embraced by retired high-level military officials who understand what is at stake. Ward Wilson is the senior fellow at the James Martin Center for Nonproliferation Studies of the Monterey Institute of International Studies, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe. It's good to be here.
What got you thinking in these terms of myths about, obviously you've been working on this for a long time, but putting it in terms of myths about these weapons?
Well, I did a lot of reading in the history of nuclear weapons and also the history of warfare. And the facts just seemed to suggest that there was some kind of disconnect. Because they were so distant from what people generally say about nuclear weapons, I was initially confused, and I spent a long time trying to figure out what exactly was going on. Eventually, it seemed like myth was an appropriate way to talk about it. The myths, after all, are stories that we tell that make us comfortable and give us a stronger sense of our own identity. And that makes sense, I think, in terms of nuclear weapons.
In reading the book, it seems to me that one of the things that becomes clear is a lot of this we just don't know, do we? I mean, in the sense of a lot of it just isn't conclusive.
Yeah. There's been only one pragmatic field test of nuclear weapons. We use nuclear weapons against Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And it's difficult to build rational, reasonable ideas on one data point. We have some experience with them in crisis and as kind of international backdrop to events since then. But in terms of their actual usefulness in war, we're really only going on that one event.
And you make the point, one of the myths being that this nuclear bomb decisively ending World War II really misguides us in many ways.
Over the last 20 years, historians have gone back into the archives in Washington and Tokyo and in Russia. And what they found is that Japan's leaders don't seem to have been that moved by the nuclear attacks. You know, we have to remember, the United States bombed 68 cities in the summer of 1945, and some of them were more completely destroyed than Hiroshima. Toyama was, for instance, 99% destroyed. And the attack on Tokyo in March killed more civilians than the attack on Hiroshima. So when the Soviets declared war, they had been neutral, and came in, that had a big strategic impact on Japan's leaders. One or two more cities, it looks as if they weren't that, you know, they knew it was a problem, but they weren't that concerned.
So the obvious follow-up being, why then are nuclear weapons such a force in global politics? Why is the issue so very much on the table so many decades after the end of the Cold War?
It's a good question. And I think it has to do with money. You think about money, we value money very highly. But when you stop and think about it, it's just paper with some colored ink and numbers and pictures on it. We imbue money with value. We decide together as a society that we're going to value these particular pieces of paper with these pictures. And so it's important to remember that people can create currency if they decide to together. And I think what's happened with nuclear weapons is that because the Japanese leadership wanted to mislead us about why they surrendered, because it was in their self-interest, we jumped to the conclusion, and because we wanted to believe that the bomb was powerful and useful and we invented it, we jumped to the conclusion that they were the new currency of power. And I think everyone still pretty much believes that. What I'm concerned about is that we may discover in some future crisis that we've overvalued that currency, that we've misunderstood its value.
We think in those terms, again, another myth about how much a modern nuclear weapon would destroy and what area it would destroy. And you don't believe that it would, because we think it would be much, much more than what it was in Japan because of modern technology.
Yeah, I was really surprised. I spent some time talking to physicists. And the thing is that the way we measure nuclear explosions is yield. Yield is a little misleading for lay people. Physicists seem to have a good grasp on what exactly is going on. But when people said in the 50s that the hydrogen bomb was 1,000 times more powerful than the Hiroshima bomb, then what the image that comes into my mind, you know, there's always those pictures of cities seen from overhead with circles of devastation. And I always imagined that if you dropped a hydrogen bomb on Hiroshima, that the circles would be 1,000 times bigger because, you know, people said the hydrogen bomb was 1,000 times more powerful. In fact, a 1 megaton bomb, depending on how high you exploded and various other factors, the circle of destruction that is the greatest, the 5 psi circle, would only be about 6 times greater than the Hiroshima bomb. So part of the problem is that we're lay people and we just need to understand the technical way that physicists talk about this. But the notion, the other thing is that over the last 30 years, war planners have been calling for smaller and smaller warheads. We now field nuclear weapons that average, it's classified, but I'm told, that they average around 135 kilotons, which is not that much greater than the Hiroshima bomb.
It seems in some cases that we just, and when you're talking about the size, it seems in some cases that we and other countries just want to say that they have one for bargaining power and leverage, as opposed to say we're going to war, that we could go to nuclear war, than the thought of actually using the weapon.
I think that's exactly right. That what's happened is that they've become these big, scary bargaining chips, but you couldn't really use them. The way I think about it is if you were trying to arm a bank guard, you hire a bank guard and you want to give him a really good weapon, you know, and you have a discussion, should you give him a knife, should you give him a baton, should you give him a gun? And somebody says, let's give him the most powerful weapon possible. Let's give him dynamite. So now here's a guy standing in the lobby with 3 sticks of dynamite tucked in his belt, and someone goes to the grill and says, you know, give me the dough. What's the guard going to do? Can he throw the dynamite and blow up the bad guy and blow up the teller and blow up the customers and most of the bank lobby? And that's the practical reality, is that nuclear weapons are pretty clumsy weapons, although they have this corona of fear that seems to give them political utility. I'm not so sure that you can actually use that fear in any useful way.
So let's explore that a little bit about the deterrence, which is obviously one of the other myths that you write about. So in a crisis, does the nuclear deterrence work? And if not, why not?
Well, I was having a conversation with a guy at Harvard, a very distinguished academic who's been in government, and he said, Ward, look, deterrence obviously works. Think about the Cuban Missile Crisis. The Russians put the missiles in, there was the risk of nuclear war, and then they took the missiles out. So what could be clearer? And it wasn't until a month later, you know, you always think of these things afterwards, that I realized that, you know, the same question should be applied to Kennedy. I love President Kennedy. I, you know, memorized his speeches as a kid and stuff. But, you know, Kennedy was faced with the choice to escalate the crisis or not, to blockade Cuba. And what he decided, even though he knew there was a very high risk of nuclear war, they mentioned it 60 times in the week that they were, you know, doing planning for what they should do, he went ahead and escalated. And if you go back and look at the Cold War crises, what you find is that there are lots of instances in which leaders took risky and aggressive action, like the Argentines making war on a nuclear power during the Falklands War, or the Syrians and Egyptians attacking Israel, even though everyone knew they had nuclear weapons. So it raises questions about whether nuclear deterrence really is that reliable. And that's a serious problem, because the consequences for failure of nuclear deterrence could be catastrophic.
On the heels of deterrence, there are many who say that, okay, then at least they keep us safe. They have preserved peace. Since the 1940s, they have preserved peace.
Yeah, well, maybe, except that there's no way to know for sure. I mean, history has lots of periods of peace, if you go back and look, and it may very well be that this is just one more of those, and we're wrongly putting our faith in nuclear weapons, and then, I mean, it's proof by absence. I'm always reminded of the, you know, the volcano erupts, and then the priest says, well, we have to throw a virgin into the volcano. And everyone says, all right, well, okay, and they throw a virgin in, and a year goes by, and the volcano has not erupted, and everyone says, well, see, it worked. And they keep throwing virgins in until the next time the mountain explodes. And so it's not clear that that proof by absence is the kind of proof that's reliable enough that we should be risking millions of lives on it.
Ward Wilson is our guest. He is the author of the new book, Five Myths About Nuclear Weapons, which is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Give us a sense, is there any connection between, in our attitudes, especially in this country, in our attitudes toward nuclear weapons, is there a connection to nuclear power? Does just that word nuclear pack a punch?
Well, I would have to say yes. I mean, I don't take a position on nuclear power. I think there are enough difficulties trying to argue against nuclear weapons. But I think it's undeniable that when you say nuclear, people's emotions go up, and that in part that's because we react so strongly to radiation. You know, this poison that is odorless. Doesn't make a noise, you can't see it, you can't smell it, it's insidious, and that really reaches people, I think, and has always been part of the, and fundamentally, the problem with nuclear weapons, people talk about, let's miniaturize nuclear weapons, and then they'll be more battlefield useful. And there's something to be said for that, but even if you had a very, very, very small nuclear weapon, they would still be leaving this trail of poison wherever you use them, where people die downwind. So there is a strong evocation, I think, when you just say the word nuclear.
Have we seen in this country examples of leaders that have questioned nuclear weapons and questioned our attitude toward them?
They tend not to get a lot of publicity, but in 1996, the former commander of STRATCOM, and before that, the Strategic Air Command, the man who was in charge of all the nuclear weapons in the United States, retired and gave a press conference at the National Press Club in Washington, at which he said nuclear weapons are terribly dangerous and we should definitely get rid of them. And the famous op-ed in 2007 by George Shultz and Henry Kissinger and William Perry and Sam Nunn, two secretaries of state, one secretary of defense, and a distinguished senator, in which they said our ultimate goal has to be to get rid of nuclear weapons. And, of course, Ronald Reagan, who, you know, pressed very hard to get rid of nuclear weapons entirely when he met with Gorbachev at Reykjavik. So I think that there have been people who have said they don't like nuclear weapons, but part of the mythic quality of nuclear weapons is you tend not to want to hear alternate stories that would make you question the story that you've told yourself that you feel comfortable with. So it doesn't get as much coverage.
And back to your point at the beginning of what you just said in your answer to that question, there have been people, but it isn't well known. So even people in office will say, this is how we feel, and yet We don't pick up on that.
Yeah, there's a kind of, you know, nuclear weapons are an uncomfortable subject. It's like you hate them. They're horrible. Maybe they're immoral, but they're necessary. And so you think about them as little as you possibly can. And I think that's the way a lot of people deal with them. You know, and so it's difficult to have a conversation about them, but it's because it's such an important topic, it's necessary.
It seems like somebody has to blink first, though, right? Because we're not going to say, okay, we're going to reduce or we're going to do this if you have them.
Well, you're absolutely right. The diplomatic problem, there are two steps here. The first step is that everyone kind of exhales and says, okay, we admit nuclear weapons are kind of blundering and messy and maybe they're outmoded and let's see what we can do with them. So that's kind of phase one. And then phase two, diplomats get involved in State Department and you do a series of, you know, admittedly complicated negotiations and you have to end up with very stringent inspections on any kind of nuclear power plants and other, you know, careful, stringent rules. But, you know, I'm a guy who sat in his room for 30 years and thought about nuclear weapons. So you need to talk to a diplomat about how to get that hard part done.
You look at South Africa, you write about them in the book, about how they built nuclear weapons, thought about it for a while, and then got rid of them.
I had dinner with a former brigadier general from South Africa, the South African Defense Forces, and he said pretty much out of the blue that, you know, one of the exercises they did when he got promoted from general to brigadier was to go through and imagine three African countries were invading South Africa. Here are the forces at your disposal, and you have six nuclear weapons. And he said, now come back with a plan. He said he thought about it for a couple of weeks, and he decided he was never going to use those nuclear weapons because you're going to poison your own soil. The radiation can blow back on Johannesburg or Durban or any of the main population areas, and they just were not that useful. And in fact, the people who pushed for the South African bomb were the industrialists and the lab, the science people, not the military. So it's not surprising South Africa gave up their nuclear weapons.
Which brings us to the question of who, in your opinion, loses out if you have these few countries who decide to continue to keep the bombs.
Well, yeah, I don't know what you do if a few countries want to keep the bomb. You probably can't go to zero if, you know, some countries insist. But the whole international, here's the thing. People right now, proponents especially, imagine that nuclear weapons are magic. They can solve any problem. You know, wave them around and people will do what you say. And as long as that perception that they're magic exists, you know, they'll never be abolished because everyone wants magic. But if all the major countries say, well, these are dumb weapons and we're cutting back and we're going to save money and, you know, we have really smart weapons. We have precision-guided munitions. Precision-guided munitions have actually been useful to the United States over the last 40 years. They're not weapons that have stayed in warehouses and silos. They are practical because they're selective and precise. Nuclear weapons, you want to blow up a house in a city, you have to blow up three-quarters of the city to do it. So I think that if we get past the hurdle of imagining that they're magic, it will change the playing field. Whether that will be enough, I don't know.
With that said, it does seem irresponsible that many people would feel that way if we know or have some evidence or strong evidence that there is a nation who is building a nuclear program, that we react in some way.
Oh yeah, you can't let people build nuclear weapons. And every new nation that builds nuclear weapons is a problem. But the other side of that coin is that what happens to nations when they build nuclear weapons is essentially what happened to South Africa. They stop. They have the trophy. They have the icon of their, you know, scientific prowess. They have the totem. But they sit around and think about it, as the South Africans did for a few years, and then they say, well, there's not really much we can do with this. I mean, on the question of Iran, which is on everyone's mind,
right?
I think the Iranians will find, if they build nuclear weapons, that, you know, the weapons, if nuclear weapons were going to allow Iran to dominate the Middle East, they would have allowed Israel to dominate the Middle East since the 1970s, and that hasn't happened. So,
do you think we will continue as we have over the past 70 years of just sort of dealing with this, of having it kind of percolating?
I hope not, because I am a historian by training and a pragmatist by inclination. And my view of history is that 6,000 years of evidence shows that human beings fight wars pretty regularly, and sometimes quite large wars. And it seems to me that the question is not, should we have a future in which there are nuclear weapons keeping us safe or try the risk of getting rid of them? The question is, looking into the future and knowing that there will likely be a large war on the horizon, particularly with global warming changing the dynamics of drought and famine and so on, shouldn't we prefer a world, shouldn't we prefer that that war be fought with bullets and hand grenades and artillery shells than with nuclear weapons?
The book is fascinating. It's Five Myths About Nuclear Weapons. It is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. If you'd like to read more about Ward's work, you can go to his website, which is www.rethinkingnuclearweapons.org. Rethinkingnuclearweapons.org. Ward Wilson, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing your expertise with us.
Thank you so much. It's been great.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, Five Myths About Nuclear Weapons, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.